What is up, Hockey IQ listeners? I'm here to chat about our newest sponsor, Sensarena. Your brain is one of the most important parts of your body. Why not invest in a tool that allows you to train it? With Sensarena, athletes can gain a competitive edge using VR training. Players are able to go through a scenario thousands of times without having to step foot on the ice. No more waiting around for puck touches or perfect scenarios. Sensarena can enhance reaction time, decision-making, and multitasking abilities, making you the next MVP. I mean, if the LA Kings are using it, it's got to be good. With our promo code HockeyIQ, you receive $50 off an annual plan purchase. Head on over to Sensarena.com to check it all out.
Welcome back, Jack, to the Hockey IQ newsletter slash podcast. I don't even know what I'm doing. Neither do you, because you're probably tired because it's Father's Day, man. Congrats.
Thanks. So Willie is, he's going to be 2 months old tomorrow. And then congrats to you, Greg, future hockey dad as well.
Yeah, super exciting. So many sleepless nights ahead. Or lack of sleep, but it's going to be a fun time. I'm already picking your brain about dad things, so cannot be more excited.
Yeah, so I figured because we're recording on Father's Day, let's start with a couple of like hockey dad stories. So my favorite hockey dad story with my dad was, like, my dad never played hockey. He can't skate. He wasn't overly supportive of my hockey career. Like, he kind of tolerated it. Like, he would, you know, he bought my skates, he put me in hockey. I wasn't very good, he didn't care, he didn't come to the games. But like, I quit hockey when we moved from Montreal to New Jersey when I was around 10 years old. And then, like, for the next couple of years, I got really fat because I sat around, played a lot of video games, ate a lot of junk food. And then like around age 12, I started getting back into hockey. And that was around the time, like, the Salt Lake City Olympics, when Canada won both men's and women's gold in hockey. And I watched both games, and the Montreal Canadiens went on this crazy run in the playoffs. And then the Detroit Red Wings, who are my second favorite team, ended up winning the cup. But during that whole playoff run, I started getting into playing hockey again. And every day after school, I would beg my dad to drive me out to this, like, disused roller hockey rink that was, like, converted from these old tennis courts. So I'd be wheeling around in these roller blades, like, in my fat kid t-shirts, and just, like, trying to raise the puck. And, you know, he wasn't, like, super enthusiastic. It's not like he was thrilled to be there, but he drove me there pretty much every afternoon. And then I started with a wood stick, and within a few weeks the wood stick was, like, you know, ground to a pulp. So he got me a stick with, like, the plastic ABS blade that would last a little bit longer. But, you know, long story short, he could have very easily said, like, I don't want to do this, I'm tired after work, and just, like, play more video games. And I think that would have changed the whole trajectory of my life. So you know, reflecting back on it, really a really happy memory, just because, like, it shows how, you know, having your parents being supportive of you can really change kind of, like, the course of your life. And I'm still, you know, always be grateful for my dad, just for him, like, kind of showing up for me.
Yeah, I just love that. Like, just simply showing up and what that means, whether it be a parent or coach, like, that's so cool. And obviously having a dad who maybe wasn't into hockey was probably a challenging thing, but also shout out to the sons out there like yourself who are like, hey dad, I know you're not into this, but I'd really appreciate it if, you know, even doing that ask, I feel like is big on your part. But that's so cool that your dad was like, even problem solving for you so you can continue to do it. He could have just let your stick erode into the ground and be like, oh, we're done, see ya.
Yeah. And you know, I I've had a really unusual upbringing, just, and the thing that really helped me back then and still helped me now is, like, everything came from me. So, you know how, like, some parents are very pushy, and, like, my parents were very pulley. They were like, you know, don't spend too much time on hockey and focus on your schoolwork and get a real job. And like, this went on until, like, I literally got a job with an NHL team in hockey ops. Right. So, but it all, so it always made me kind of feel like I got to be on top of my game, not only to be successful in my career, but also to keep my parents off my back. So, you know, maybe a little bit unusual, but I'm actually quite grateful for that.
Yeah, I've got the maybe some opposite, but I still have the same like non-pushy dad story. Like my dad coached me literally like my entire career to save a few seasons. I was playing like travel or it was my freshman year of high school, but like he was literally my high school coach. So it was like really cool. But he never like was a super pushy go like do every single thing you can to maximize. Like he realized that I was a little bit more like you, like I love the game and I had an affinity for it. And I may have had some, a good base of athleticism from him. But never like pushed me to go be the best. Like I was always like the best double A player in Cleveland. Could have probably played triple A, but it just was never a passion of mine. I just loved playing the game, shooting pucks, being out, wheeling, hanging out with friends out on the ice and playing mini sticks nonstop in my basement. But there was never like that push from my dad. And I think that's the reason why I still love it so much today. Cause it's always been me trying to figure it out. Or like he'd point something out during the night. I'd pull something out of the game and like, oh, check this out. And we just have these conversations over NHL Network and just watching the games literally every single night and having the NHL package, just having those conversations. And, you know, I'm only 32, but I feel like I'm a 45 year old hockey wise, just from seeing the game literally since far back as I possibly can remember, and him having that ability to maybe not make it hockey, but having it there so I could eat it up. Like, and now that I'm talking about it, I actually remember a really cool thing is the hockey news at one point was not available in the States, but he somehow figured out how to get it to the United States. So he somehow called in, got them to send it to our house in Ohio. And I was just like diving into the hockey news. I still have some old ones in my childhood room when I ever go back to visit him and just flip through those suckers every once in a while. And it's just a blast from the past. It's awesome.
Okay. So I want to bookmark that anecdote for when we talk about our newsletters later on. But cause I think it's an important thing. And I had some similar experiences in my youth, but just to segue into the first topic that you want to talk about, which is how we work with our clients. Well, still on this Father's Day theme, recently I was at the QMJHL entry draft, and two of the players I've been working with for a few years, they were up and they were projected to go first round. So Alex Huang, who's a right-hand defenseman, he went fifth overall to Chicoutimi, and then Philip Veilleux, who's a left-handed forward, went 11th overall to Val-d'Or. And the coolest moment from that day was just like when the players got picked, I would look at their dads and like the look on their faces was, it was like priceless, right? Like I know how involved they are and how supportive and how many hours they put in, how many dollars they've invested, obviously. And I remember when Phil got picked, there was like a really short interview segment that was being broadcast on the Jumbotron. And you know, the queue draft is run almost like the NHL draft, where we're actually sitting in a queue building in Sherbrooke, and you know, we were in the stands, and then there was a Jumbotron. The teams were, they had the tables kind of where the ice normally would be. So Phil was getting interviewed after getting selected, and the journalist like basically put it on a tee for him, because the journalist asked him like, you know, is there one person that you wanted to thank for helping you get here? And like, you know, obviously it wasn't me, it was his dad. So I turned around and looked at his dad, Sebastian, who's sitting behind me. And, you know, Phil was like, yeah, like I wouldn't be here without my dad. Like he's my biggest supporter and I'm really grateful. And like I was convinced that Seb was going to start crying. He didn't, he kept it together, but like just, but I love that stuff. Like above anything else, just, I'm just hoping to be there and just like watch his expression again, you know, when Phil gets hopefully drafted into the NHL, plays his first game, gets his first goal, you know, maybe wins a Stanley Cup. But just like I wouldn't even want to look at what's going on the ice. Like I just want to look at like the dad the whole time, because I just think like as a dad now, like it's just like there's nothing better than that.
It truly takes a village. So, and just like when we talk about coaching, like the environment's always the first teacher. And if you don't have a good home situation, it can be very, very difficult. Just having that beautiful, supportive environment to grow up in is awesome. And I kind of love your idea of like players thinking to the people that truly help them. When I coach high school, like you get the seniors and our last game happens, whether we win or lose, and just reminding players, I'm like, there's some parents out there, like this is their last game as well. And it's going to be a heartfelt moment. So make sure you thank your parents as well. And it's amazing to see those like last embraces after the game is both the player and the parent both know, like this is the end of kind of one leg of the journey as they go into usually adulthood rather than, you know, you've got a little more range on how long your players are going. But like, even with my high school team, just like, those special bonds between parents and players, because all those hours they spent in the car together and you know, going to rinks at ungodly hours.
Yeah. You know, kind of on the flip side, like one of the things that I think we've all seen at one moment or the other is like, for me, it's like the biggest tragedy in youth hockey is like when the parents and the coaches don't get along, because they're almost like, they're kind of undoing each other's work, you know? So like everybody really should be, you know, should have the kids' best interests at heart. And oftentimes they do, but the way that they go about it maybe is at odds. And then it's almost like, you know, I'm writing something on a blackboard and then you come and you erase it and then you write something else. And then I got to come after you. And, you know, basically we're getting nowhere and we're creating a lot of friction. And, like that's really something that I think is really too bad, you know, in a lot of situations.
Well, I think there's the element, and you're, you know, putting this one on a tee of like, how do we help the parents realize their best role and how can we best work as consultants and player consultants with the parents to set up an environment where it's seamless, no matter if they're with us or with their parent, and they're getting fed quality things in their ear all day, every day. So I'm curious, that'll lead me into my first big topic here is just like, you know, how do we go about working with parents, or how do you go about it? Cause obviously we both have clients and I've got my thoughts, but I'm curious to start with your thoughts of like, how do you love to work with parents?
So there, like, I've got two thoughts on this. First of all, is like the really cynical thought, which is who pays you? What's the parent, right? So it generally, it's poor business practice to bite the hand that feeds you. That's the first thought. The second thought is, from a teaching perspective, you may be with the kid 1 or 3 or 5 hours a week, but the parents is with the kid, you know, basically 24/7. So either you have an opportunity to teach the kids something that's going to get undone by the parents, or you have a chance to teach the kids something that's actually going to actively being reinforced by the parents, which essentially amplifies your coaching tenfold, because, you know, just the amount of time and the amount of interaction. So what actually ends up happening when I work with my minor hockey clients, especially, you know, whether they're, you know, U12, U14, U18, now junior, is I'm actually coaching the parent. So in my case, mostly it's the dads. So I'm coaching the dads on what is most likely to help their kids. And then they kind of ultimately, they'll call that shot, but they're going to come from a place of understanding and a place of like, okay, this is what the best practices are. And then, you know, like I'm not gonna get in the middle of this, you know, the hockey dad and the player relationship, right? So all I can do is to help the dad be as informed as possible, and also, you know, maintain a relationship with the kid. But mostly I kind of take a back seat. So I think of it as like the dad is a head coach and I'm the assistant.
That's a great strategy. Think of the dad as the head and you're the assistant. Like, how can I best help given the situation? They've got more influence overall. You know, at the end of the day, they're the ones who are going to drive the bus with a lot of the yes, no decisions. I really love that thought process. Like, for me, a lot of it is just thinking ahead of like, what is the next step? What are we going towards and educating around? you know, where do we want to go next? What are some things you can look at with your kid as progress versus not? Because a lot of things that I like to work with maybe aren't just like, how well can they toe drag? So it's like retraining eyes of what to actually look for that shows room of improvement. And something I love to do is just like after any session is just do like a recap with the player to see what they remember from it. And often the parents are right there as they're undoing their skates and just having that opportunity to show and have them understand what we're doing, why we're doing it, and where we're going with it. So I think that's absolutely crucial from like at an ice session, but then away from it, just always saying, okay, here's how I thought a session went or a week went, or where are we now? Where are we going? Why do we want to do what we're doing? I think those are key items.
So the thing you just touched on, like it's a bit of a Jedi mind trick that you'll see NHL coaches use, which is sometimes in their post-game interviews, like the coaches will say something to the media, but they're actually talking to the players because they know that the players like they'll listen to everything, or they'll read the newspapers or the following morning. So it's like, you know, after you get off the ice, I, for instance, if we just worked on something, I'm talking to the dad, but I want to make sure the kid is in earshot, or even vice versa. Like I'd be telling the kid something, but I want to make sure the dad is in earshot so that basically that message is going to get repeated. And also it's, you know, it just makes sure that everybody's on the same page. So it's like, if you want to make something a little bit less threatening and you don't want to confront somebody directly, well, just say it to somebody else, but within earshot of the person that you actually want to talk to. And so it's like, you know, they can reject the message, but if they accept it, it's almost like half of it is their idea because they chose to listen in on a conversation that was quote unquote not for them.
Yes. And this is actually a trick I like to do when I'm a head coach. And you have to tell the assistant coaches ahead of time on this, but basically I'm yelling at the assistant coaches to get their players playing better rather than actually yelling at the players to play better. Like, you better get so-and-so doing what we talked about in practice, you know, flying the zone is not going to get it done, or whatever the message is. And like the player hears it and they're feeling like, oh, I really don't want to disappoint and, you know, have my coach be yelled at for my mistake. So a similar kind of concept of within your shot to get the message to a said person, but a little less confrontational and in their face.
Yeah. So for all the coaches or even the parents out there, I would encourage that.
Awesome. So next thing I want to go to here is we talked about, we are consulting these players, you know, these are our clients. These are the people who are paying us. You know, how do we actually go about doing said things? So I'll start with you. Like, how do you actually start a relationship? What does it look like? How are you getting, you know, say video if you're doing it, or getting background? How do you like to go about, what materials are you preparing for the player? But, you know, let's get a little nitty gritty on it.
So, no matter what kind of business that you're running, whether it's a restaurant, whether it's, I don't know, a factory, a store, or in our case, you know, a hockey coaching consultancy, what you'll notice over time is that there are some ways of acquiring clients which are more effective than others. And in my experience, like I would say 100% of the people that I've worked with who I'm still working with on an ongoing basis, found me through my newsletter, which is called the Hockey Tactics Newsletter on Substack. There's about, you know, I think we're up to like 6,200 subscribers of all kinds, whether it's free, whether it's paid. And the thing is there's a marketing concept called segmenting, which is basically what it says is your clients are not all the same. Right. So out of these 6,000 odd people, there's going to be a large chunk that read the newsletter for entertainment, much like you would read, let's say, you know, ESPN or you know, watch any news program or watch hockey. Like, you're not playing necessarily, you're not coaching necessarily, but it's just, it's a way for you to learn something, but also it's just fun. Like, you're not really looking to do anything with that. Right. And then a much smaller chunk of that readership are going to be your stakeholders. So whether you're a high-level player, you're a high-level coach, you're a hockey parent, you're an analyst, you are a media member. Like, obviously, that's a much smaller part of the pie. But really, when we're talking about consulting, you know, basically your clients are going to come from there. So I'm not expecting to have 6,000 clients. I might have, you know, 60 or 20 or 10 or 5 or whatever. But, you know, that's the expectation. So again, like, not everyone is going to engage with what you're doing at the same level, and that's completely okay. It's just the ones who are looking for more information, I try to make it easy for them to get in touch with me and try and seek more information. And then it becomes kind of like a conversation of like, okay, well, does it make sense for us to work together on an ongoing basis? Or maybe, you know, you buy one of my products and that suits your needs. Or maybe I just quickly answer your question, takes me 10 minutes, and then you're happy and you're on your way.
Yeah, I found the same thing. It used to be the local rink. Like, there wasn't much high level coaching in my area on the east side of Cleveland. So it was really easy to have like the best players be my clients. Now with the move to Columbus, it's been a lot harder to get into rinks just based on how the community is set up. So I would say 80%. I still have like the 20% from where I was and all of those connections, but now 80% are probably either Twitter DMs from random fathers out there, or players. And then, yeah, through the newsletter, just sparking a conversation and going from there. And some of it's players. And I know you have the same thing as well, where some of it's actually coaches that we're consulting with and their teams and what they're looking for, like whether it be, hey, what's wrong? What can we look at? What are some areas that you would do? Like, you would look to change or improve if you were in the driver's seat, like I am. So I agree. Like, that's such a powerful way. Like, someone once told me, opportunity doesn't visit caves. You actually have to put yourself out there a little bit. And I think you and I with the newsletters have obviously both gotten pretty decently sized. You said, I think 6,200, we're at over 5,600. So there's still a long way to go. I think there's, you know, probably a few million hockey fans and players and coaches out there, but it's a great start.
Yeah. And I think the important thing to realize is like, it's not for everyone, like whether it's your newsletter or mine. It's really for people who like to think kind of at the second level. They're not just passively consuming hockey. They're looking to, again, like, there are probably lots more players and parents and media members and analysts who are actively engaged with the game, as opposed to just, you know, people who are passively watching it for entertainment, which is fine also. But just to talk more about the client side of things, which is, you know, the thing that I'm starting to understand more and more the longer I do this, is that the people who are actually looking to pay for my time, they're not necessarily looking for more information, because to be honest, they can get a lot of good information for free, whether it's from me, whether it's from you, whether it's from, you know, other folks on Twitter or YouTube or wherever. The value in hiring somebody such as ourselves is reducing uncertainty or reducing anxiety. So the best example is, again, the players I work with who are heading into the major junior next year. Now, I've started a big project. You know, I'm watching every single QMJHL team from last season and identifying whether it's league trends, whether it's individual teams, how they play, you know, are there opportunities, or are there things that essentially are going to help my players make a smoother transition into the league and then be better and sharper at exploiting the opportunities that arise. So all this information is out there because, like, the parents I work with, they have access to InStats. They have access to, you know, different platforms that, you know, they can go watch the games themselves. Obviously, I'm saving them time, but also I'm saving them, I'm giving them peace of mind, because when I tell them, you know, X and Y, it reduces their anxiety and it reduces their uncertainty of what to expect. And ultimately, you know, that gets filtered down to the kids, right? Because if the parents are anxious, then eventually that filters down to the kids. And then if the kids are anxious, then it's reasonable to assume that they're not going to play as well or have as much fun playing. So again, it's not a question of delivering more knowledge or more information. It's more about like, okay, well, this information is there. Maybe it's formatted a little bit differently coming from me. And then they have more peace of mind. And then ultimately they have a better outcome, hopefully.
Yeah. And it's funny because my day job is a wealth advisor. So like I get to see why I get hired versus not, and like who actually values the advice and who doesn't. Cause it's the same idea of like, it's time, advice, and you're spot on. Like 90% of the time it's, hey, I want to save time and I want to feel more confident in my decisions. Like beyond that, really, it's all superfluous. It's just, I want to feel confident in what I'm doing. Like I've got some clients, I've got some mad crazy spreadsheets. They could do this all on their own. Like they really don't need me, but they love having that voice to talk through things and be like, yes, I'm truly making the best decision given my situation. And I feel like players are the exact same way. And the big thing for me is just that confidence piece. Like there's so many voices, there's so many ideas out there, but what is the best one at this time? Or how can we help guide those folks to that and just provide the confidence in what we are doing, whether it be a process or how do we play the game or what we're doing in the offseason, eating, et cetera.
Yeah. And it's so, you know, I know of players or coaches, you know, especially skills coaches who are very protective of their clients. And I know some who work at the very highest level who, you know, have some business practices that I don't quite agree with. But for me, like, I don't really feel that I'm in competition. Like recently an agent approached me saying he'd like to refer one of the kids I work with to another consultant. Who specialize in his position, who, you know, may have some more specialized knowledge for him. And, you know, I told this agent, like, go for it. If anything that I'm telling this kid doesn't jive with what he's being told by this other coach, I want to know this because maybe it's something that I can learn or something that I can get better at, right? And obviously it helps also that I have, you know, both individual and team level clients. So it's not like I'm running around and I need to kind of, you know, squeeze every dollar, right? But I just think it's like a really great opportunity, whether it's strength coaches, nutrition, or you know, mental skills, anything like that. Like, because our job as consultants is to, again, first of all, it's to, you know, reduce uncertainty, but also minimize blind spots. And we all have our own blind spots. So obviously it's easy for me as someone with NHL and AHL experience come in and identify the blind spots that a minor hockey parent may have, but you know, I have them too. So whether it's, you know, off ice training that I don't really know a ton about compared to these other experts or nutrition or anything like that. But like it's like hockey's gone in this direction where like every player kind of has their own team. And I welcome that. Like if you're a player who's really, I think has the base kind of desire and base kind of skill to move up to the next level, then I think it's natural to want to minimize all these blind spots and have different people that you can kind of lean on at different moments.
Yeah. And it's amazing how many high level players, I'll leave it at that, we'll slide into your and I's DMs that are definitely household names and just asking for like, hey, are you noticing anything about my game? Just like offhand and looking for that piece of information. So it's absolutely true. Or like I've had quite a few players, like I'm just looking to do things differently. Like I see a lot of X, Y, and Z out there. I see that you and Jack are doing things differently. I want in on what you guys are talking about, the concepts, et cetera. Cause a lot of the stuff that you and I talk about, like you just can't find out there elsewhere, like speed behind the puck or talking about speed differentials. Like this is not what gets talked about. It's go to the net hard. rather than, okay, maybe we should time our arrival there. We're attacking downhill at the right time. We're funneling to the net, all that kind of stuff. So just thinking about things differently, I find is something also that a lot of people are trying to connect with, particularly with the clients. I've got a lot of defensemen. Just like, how are we staying active as a weak side defenseman? How are we getting puck recoveries? How are we defending? How are we stopping movement? Those types of key items. And just figuring out, like, what is the matrix? You know, like, what do we do well and what do we want to abuse, to say the least, versus what do we maybe want to lean away from and stay away from as much as we can currently and build towards it as something that maybe doesn't have to be a super big strength, but at least isn't holding us back, and figuring out what those elements are within an identity of a player, where we currently are, where we want to go, and how do we play the game given our skill set? Because if you're going up against someone who can skate, you probably don't want to get in a foot race all day long. How can you lean into your skill set?
Okay, so let me try this on you. If an NHL player, let's say somebody who plays regular minutes, who's making seven figures, slides into your DMs and then asks you, you know, a pretty pointed question about his game, and, you know, ask you, let's say, you know, what do you think of my, you know, my retrievals, let's say. Would you charge them for your time?
Currently, if they're looking for just a quick like synopsis, and I'll even say that to them, I'm basically saying, here's what I currently think about your game. I don't watch enough to go into any further detail, but just as a casual observer, these things stick out to me. And then give them the spiel of like, if you want to go a little bit deeper, happy to do so, but I do charge for my time.
Okay. So, the reason why I asked this actually is related to your anecdote about the hockey news. Okay. And like it sounds like two completely different things, but the thing that I remember fondly from my youth is same as you. Like I was really into, whether it was cars or airplanes or hockey or tennis. Like I loved having my parents buy me magazines, and I would kind of read the crap out of them. Like I would read like the same magazine 20 times, and I would look at the instructional piece in that magazine and go and try it out and like read it again and again and to make sure I got it. And like, this is, you know, before YouTube, before the ability to film yourself. And like, that was essentially the only source of instructional content that I could get. And like, we paid what it was like $5 a magazine, right? Like, and we would read it all over and over, and we would keep it for years. And whereas today, like, you know, we have all of these, whether it's newsletters, whether it's, you know, Twitter accounts, whether it's YouTube videos, like all of these like super high quality instructional material, and, you know, way more sophisticated than what we had access to. But like, all of this is free, and it's like we take it for granted, and then we watch it once, almost sort of, you know, you watch, it's like, okay, well, I know this now. And then you don't go back to it. Maybe you don't even try it out. And then you're just waiting for a next video, like as if watching a video actually like teaches you by osmosis to get better. It's like you watch a 20-minute video on, you know, NHL defenseman retrievals, and you're thinking, okay, well, I can retrieve pucks like an NHL defenseman because I just watched a 20-minute video, right? Whereas like, it obviously doesn't work that way. So what I'm saying essentially is that you get what you pay for, right? So even like how I would handle that situation is like, generally speaking, what I would do is like, I would say, you can either pay me for my time, or I can write about it on the newsletter, which is essentially the same thing, because obviously, you know, I have a paid aspect to my newsletter and it drives sales to my eBooks. So it's like, it comes down to the same thing. It's like, if you want something from me, you got to give me something in return. But the fact that you gave me something valuable in return means that you're going to in turn value my advice more, which actually helps you, right? So it's like, you're actually doing them a favor by asking them for something in return. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I have the same idea for like, I loved college club hockey. I coached there a little bit when I first started. And, you know, they pay, like there's a vested interest when they're actually paying and giving something in return that you don't get elsewise, or even with like clients that have kids that they're funding their 529 plans and they're going to go to college and they get it paid for. And those kids tend to be the ones that may struggle more than the ones that are paying their way. And the ones that are paying their way, like, there's a vested interest not to screw it up. And actually, like, I was one of these kids too. Like, I was actually upset when the teacher didn't show for class. I'm like, I'm paying for this. I'm trying to get as much value out of it as humanly possible. Might have something to do with that. I was an economics minor, but to be determined on that.
Yeah. So it, like, I know a lot of folks who are working kind of in our sphere are having trouble making ends meet working in hockey. And so the first piece of advice for me is to charge, and the second advice is to charge more. Because ultimately, you're getting a higher quality of clients who are more likely to actually do what you tell them and more likely to have success, which kind of contributes to a virtuous cycle. Because then if your clients have success, then that's going to attract more, and you know, so on and so forth. And it's actually happened where I've had to kind of quote unquote fire people who, you know, fire clients, because they're like, I could see, like, they want the information at a discount, but actually we're spending more time talking about how much I'm going to charge and how much they're going to pay versus how they're going to implement. So at this point, it's like, if most of our conversation is about pricing, then I don't think the product is right for you, because, you know, it's not going to work, and you're not going to put in the kind of investment that's going to be, you know, necessary.
All right. I got to find this text message, cause it was absolutely gold. Where was it? All right. Okay. So I'll just summarize the last little bit. It was like, hey, this was awesome. Got a ton out of it. Thank you so much. Please tell me how much I owe you. It was worth every penny. Like, I literally could have made up a number and the person would have been fine, because like, they actually see the value in it. And you know, these are the players that tend to actually implement, like you said, like, ideas are dime a dozen. Everyone knows that execution is the key aspect. I mean, that's why I'm never scared to share anything. Like, I know I can execute on things that matter. Execution's where the money's made.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, you know, if you tell that person, okay, I'll charge you $2, they may, like, you know, they may practice it a little bit. They may practice it like once. If you charge them $200, they're going to practice it every day for the next 6 months. Cause first of all, they don't want to have to come back again. So they're going to have to wait till it works and they really master it before coming back to you, and maybe for something else. Right. So it's funny how, like, the same thing, whether it's free on YouTube or, you know, $20 for a session or $200 for a session, like, it's three completely different outcomes for the same information.
Yeah. And the outcome is really what matters and what everyone's actually seeking if they are true to themselves. Yeah. Love that. Next place I'd like to go is, like, how do you work with clients? Cause like, for me, I've gone to the completely virtual. Like, if they were in Columbus, it might be a different story, but almost all but two are outside of Columbus at this point. So all my stuff is literally like through Instat, grabbing video. And if I'm cutting video, I'm also charging for that time. Like, it's not just like time we're together. Like, I'm keeping track of what am I doing to cut film, come together, do a Zoom session, whatever it may be, for that. So for me, when it comes down to it, I'm doing all virtual, and it's all about how are we playing the game. There might be a technical thing in there a little bit. Like, I had one player that just did not have an outside edge on her left outside edge. Like, it was unbelievable. Like, you could clearly see that people were gaining steps on her, but for the most part, it's how are we playing the game and just trying to guide the mind and the eyes of the proper information to figure out reads and playing into strengths.
So it's mostly remote, like, especially like, I started doing this during COVID when there wasn't a lot of opportunity to get on the ice. After a while, we started having more opportunities, but now it's, as you said, it's a lot via, whether it's Instat video or maybe, you know, the player or the parent send me video. But before that, like if possible, I still like to have an in-person component just to meet the person and sit down with them and watch them skate. Cause you know, video is great for identifying maybe more tactical things, but obviously in person, you get a much higher definition look of whether, especially shooting or skating. I find those are two skills that, you know, on video, like it's pretty deceptive, especially if the angle or the video quality is not that great. But basically, and I don't know if this resonates with everybody that's going to listen to this, but it's a little bit like driving a manual, like a stick shift car, where you got to work the clutch and the shifter, and you got to find kind of that, like that sticking point where you can sort of start shifting and you start kind of, you can start applying power. So when I work with a person, it's kind of similar where like you got to find the right cues or the right way to deliver the information. And when you figure that out, after it gets easier, because then you know that like you can affect change. But before you're able to get to that point, you don't really know what it's going to take. Is it going to take, you know, like the best players, they can make adjustments without even video. Like you just have a conversation with them and they're like, okay, yeah, I got it. And then, you know, the next day you see that. But other players need video. Other players need, you know, for you to be there in person, to be shown or to feel it themselves. Or so, I don't know, like it depends on the person. And I think the clients with whom I've had the best result are the ones that I've skated with, or I've at least, you know, watched in person on a regular basis.
I think that's a big thing, is like personality drives everything, and figuring out like, how does this person want to do the session together? So a lot of times for me, it's parents reaching out on behalf of the player. So the player may not even want it in the first place, or like they like the idea of it, but they don't know how this all works quite yet, or like what it's going to look like. And just even like getting them to open their shell a little bit can sometimes be a challenge. But then once you figure it out, like you said, kind of like that sweet spot, I find it to be where things start to take off, where it's no longer you just like preaching, do this, that, or the other. It's like you said, a conversation more so than anything else, where you're learning about them and their game. And that's where you're able to then figure out like, what's the next little inch that we need to go to improve, rather than talking at them. Having that conversation is super key in figuring out what does that personnel and that personality look like.
Yeah. So it's like, if you have a parent who wants to hire you and their kid is like not sold, and then you immediately jump into, let's say, like a Zoom session where you're breaking down their tape, generally speaking, my feeling is it's not going to work, because you have a stranger that your parents hired for you who is critiquing your game or looking to make changes right away, and you don't know this person, you know, you don't trust them, obviously, and you feel like you're vulnerable. So you're gonna clam up, right? Like it's really like, it's not a good way to start a relationship, right? So generally speaking, what I like to do is the first session is like, there's no video. It could be really short, could be just 15, 20 minutes. Talk to the kid, maybe just one-on-one, like without the parents, just, you know, what's your story? Right. And we'll just talk, just, you know, here's what I'm about. I want to know what you're about. I want to know how you want to play the game. I want to know why you like to play the game. And I think after there's some comfort being built there, then we can start, right? Like we're not looking to rush into this right away. We're not looking to deliver information right away, right? We're just looking to understand like, who is it that we're dealing with, kind of on both sides.
Yeah. And it's the same thing from where I've learned to go, is the first conversation is all around like, where are you at? How did this come to be? Like, did you request this? Did your parents do it? Like, what do you want to get out of it? And like, just basically throw it back on the player of like, what are you looking for? Is this something you truly want? And whether the parents there or not, like, I don't really care on that first conversation, but same idea of like, getting to know the player first before we dive into the actual content of how we go about improving.
And this actually happened a couple of times when, you know, I tell the parents about like, okay, I want to set up a Zoom call with the player, and the player never gets back to me. And like the parents like, okay, have you guys talked or anything? I'm like, look, like your son doesn't seem invested in the process. Or maybe he's like, just, you know, not on top of his stuff. Right. And just, so if we're not able to even set up a time to talk, then I don't think this is going to work. Like, I'm not going to force it. Right. Like I, like he's got better things to do, it seems. And I've got things to do. And, if we can't even agree on time to talk and actually, you know, look into each other's eyes and have a conversation, then there's no way that we can actually affect change in this game, because we're not even past step one here.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And whether it be like you get ghosted or you kind of like ghost the kid a little bit of like, this clearly isn't working. Like, what do we need to do here? Like, I'm okay if you fire me, or like, we just don't go forward. Like, I'm never going to force the next session. Like, they almost need to ask for it. Like, I'll check in like, hey, do you want to do anything? Like, how's things going? But like for me right now, I only have a few that are truly like retainers where we've got scheduled out items. The rest is just like, whenever they're ready, we'll do a session.
Yeah. And again, like the KPI is like, it's not how many sessions you do per month or per season. It's how long you're able to maintain this relationship and what positive outcomes you get in this process. So it could be very well possible that you talk to this kid once per season, you give them one thing, they work on it, they put it into a game, and all of a sudden it makes a big difference. So it's not like, it's not your input that really matters. It's the output of the player ultimately.
Yeah. And that leads into kind of where I want to go next with this, is just like, how do we use our newsletters? Cause that's one of the things I utilize with clients all the time. Like, I will send them either newsletters following up on the points that we've talked about, or lead into like, hey, here's some things I'm going to want to talk about on our upcoming call, and just like sending them some of the newsletters that I've written already, or like it sparks an idea of, okay, if this player's having this problem and this concept's pertinent for them, you know, why wouldn't someone else want to have this as well? And it almost leads into what I'm talking about. Like, for example, I just released one on line changes, and it was all about coach frustrated with how their team changed the bench. Like, how do I do bench configuration? Or another one was around defensemen, like shorting the zone. Like, never even heard of the concept. I'm like, doubtful you've heard of this, so read this before we talk again. But here's something we want to talk about that could potentially go in your game because you're a great skater.
Yeah. And I think if you look at the best practices, what, you know, even outside of hockey, like how to write content that people will gravitate toward, it's don't write for everyone, write for one specific person. And I think that's a big reason why both of our newsletters have been really successful, is that person could be us. Like, we came across a clip that we liked and we thought it was really interesting, or you know, one of our clients asked us about something and we did some research and we found something that can help them and other people, or you know, maybe someone asked us a question and it kind of caught us off guard. But you know, whenever I write something, it's with someone specific in mind, and it can kind of go both ways, which is once in a while I'll get, you know, someone will email me with a question, and then instead of answering it to them and then have to re-answer for every other person who asked me this question, I'll just write a newsletter post and say like, okay, well, I answered your question, but also I've sent this to 6,000 odd people. So I wouldn't have to type this, you know, out again every single time somebody asked me. Or another way that I use it is like, if I cover a certain topic with a client, and just as a way of reinforcing it, or maybe, you know, I forgot something important and I want to kind of go back and clarify my thinking a little bit, I'll write it out so that it makes it more real for all of us, right? So it's, you know, a conversation can be a little bit fuzzy, but then once we're able to make a newsletter post out of it, then it becomes like something that we can refer back to. And again, like the power of the newsletter is, like on the Substack backend, I can actually look at how many times people open each email And like, we have some power users. I know I have some power users. You probably have the same way, but like, they'll open a certain email like 12 times. And I know that like they're on their way to applying that, because if you read it once, then you might have read it to, you know, as entertainment or just to pass the time, you know, if you have a slow day at the office or whatever. But if you read something, you know, 10, 15, 20 times, then it's probably a sign that you're actually going to do something with this information, which is really exciting.
Or like, you can see the person that goes back to old content over and over again. And I might be the only one. I'm wondering if you have this too. Like, someone emails me and I'll like give them a sentence, and then I'll just like, for further information, I'm happy to talk further, but here's my thoughts on blank subject, and just drop the link of a newsletter.
Yeah. I mean, it saves us a lot of time, right?
Yeah. Massive amount of time. So I love using that. And I even wrote a newsletter on like how I've seen other coaches utilize it, which is like, take a concept, use it with your team, use it with your parents, and save yourself a bunch of time. And it's, you know, for the most part, all free. So it's not like anything's blocked. You're able to have these conversations with players or give it as homework. Like, I've done that with my high school team. Like, here's the newsletter for the week. Like, we're going to talk about it and film this, you know, this Wednesday. Coming together with thoughts and things. I'm going to call on everyone to make sure that, you know, we actually did our homework, and it's really powerful.
So actually for as long as I've worked with the Connecticut Whale of the PHF, like, we've had kind of our private newsletter where I post, you know, could be just like short reminders, could be our video pre-scouts, could be, you know, other stuff like conceptual stuff. And the main reason I started doing this was I work with Connecticut on a remote basis. So obviously, I'm not physically there to run the video meeting, though I am physically there once in a while, especially if they're flying up to Canada, I'll try to join them. But the other thing is, what I found is, working in college hockey and then pro hockey, is not every player consumes information the same way. Some players, to be honest, they'll zone out a little bit during video meetings, and then they'll, you know, be too embarrassed to ask what they missed, or, you know, maybe there's a language barrier, or maybe, you know, I've even coached players with learning disabilities, whether it's dyslexia, whether it's ADHD or anything else. So, so we started using the newsletter as a way of for players to consume information at their own pace. And even for players, you know, who, for whatever reason, they don't like to consume hockey related information, which, surprisingly, you know, those players exist even at the highest levels. They can ask their teammates. And, you know, if there's a critical mass of players on a team, let's say, I don't know, 12 out of 20 players, or, you know, 15 out of 20 players, who are regular readers and who understand what's going on, then basically any player who's a little bit behind can turn to their left or to their right, ask them like, okay, what about this? Get an immediate answer. And then all of a sudden everybody understands, and nobody has to feel embarrassed or ashamed about it.
Yeah. It just stimulates the conversation in general. And there's many ways and reasons why. And I think that's one of the most impactful pieces of like, oh, did you see the coach Rivek put this out? Like, no, I didn't. Okay. What's that all about? And like, the players start the conversations themselves. Or like, we had two brothers on the same team, and it was cool. One was a senior, one was a freshman. The freshman was basically teaching the senior, and then sometimes it'd be the senior teaching the freshman. And just the parents were telling me that they're having more conversations about this than they would have otherwise, which I thought was super cool.
Yeah. So I think we're slowly seeing how the way that like the public consumes hockey information, which is like magazines or newsletters or, you know, Twitter feeds, it's trickling into actually how hockey teams go about their business. Because, you know, both of us, like we just said it, like both of us learned about hockey through magazines, through reading, basically at our own pace. It wasn't somebody shouting information at us and then berating us if we didn't get it. It was, you know, we took our time, we were curious, we went back, we looked at stuff several times, we apply things on our terms, and then eventually we got it, right? So I think the thing, just like my biggest takeaway from when I was working in the Leafs organization, is just for all the things that we did right, I didn't think we were actually very strong at giving that kind of what I call asynchronous option to the players, which is like, what if you didn't pay attention during the video meeting, right? Maybe you can go and see an assistant coach and have him go over some clips with you, but like, what if the coach is not available? Or what if, you know, you got to go home for whatever reason, then that information gets lost and it's difficult for you to catch back up. So certainly with the teams that I consult with now, you know, at least the coaching staff, we have really strong, like either with Dropbox or email or other platforms, like we have really strong, a really strong ability to look up from information after the fact and consume things on our terms. With Connecticut, you know, I was able to make a lot of inroads so that our players had the same options. And, you know, for those who wanted to talk things through with me, then we go to a Zoom call, right? Like if you watch the meeting and you have more questions, you want to talk about something specific in your game, then, you know, I know that the player has done her homework. She's up to speed, but she wants to go deeper. So then I would happily take half an hour out of my time to set up a Zoom call. We'll talk it over. It's always a great information because like nobody's coming in like, you know, with blinders on because we've both done our work and then the conversation is productive. We don't need to talk more than maybe a couple times a month because it's like, look, here's what you do. And then let's talk again, like in 3 weeks to see if you've done it and then we can course correct. So that, again, as you said, like it puts the onus a lot more on the players, but in a way it's way more low pressure because it's on their terms and they dictate the timing of it.
Yeah, because as you said, there are some players who will eat this stuff for breakfast and then you've got other players that will not be that way. And that goes all the way up to the NHL. Like I know players on teams that they don't watch hockey unless their coach brings it up to them. They'd rather have a conversation or, you know, there's a million different ways. Or there's a player that I'm super high on and I've written about. And I asked him once, I'm like, so how do you like go about learning and doing the game? He's like, yeah, I don't watch hockey. Like I just doesn't interest me. I'd rather go play golf. And he's perfectly fine. He picks things up. No problem.
Yeah. And like some of the coaches I've worked with in the past, like they'll almost like talk about these players in really negative terms. Right. But in a way, like I think those players, like I find them really interesting because it, for instance, this player that you're talking about, if he'd rather play golf, like what kind of focus does it take to be a great golfer? Right. He probably brings that focus to the rink and maybe, in a way, it's like he doesn't care about watching other people play hockey because he has such a clear idea of how he wants to play it that it's really not necessary to do that, right? Like if and like that's the players that those are players that we're looking for because those are players that are going to do things differently and better than everybody else, right? Certainly, he may be the exception now. Like most of the high end players I've worked with, whether it's at the junior level or at the pro level. They are hockey nerds and they are interested in what other people are doing. And a lot of times it's like, it's a way for them to steal things or to build on top of other people to kind of get ahead. But then you also have these players who are like, are so much kind of on their own program that, you know, you don't need to tell them what's possible or what's not, cause they'll figure it out by themselves. And you're almost like kind of putting limits on them by saying, well, you know, nobody else is doing this, but maybe, you know, if he wants to do this and then maybe he can do it.
Yeah, absolutely spot on. I would say majority are the hockey nerds, but every once in a while you get a kid who's just like doing his own thing. And you're like, you just see moments of genius where like, no one's even thought of that, let alone tried it. And you're out here trying it, which is amazing. And the kid I'm talking about is just straight up killer. Like he's going to be an NHLer for a long time. But he plays the game a little bit differently, sees a little bit differently. And that's the fascinating because a lot of the new is brought in by new people. It's not existing people trying to do things differently that have seen everyone do this, that, and the other. It's coming into like, it's always driven by the players coming into the league rather like the changes coming from guys coming into the league rather than guys in the league really changing the game dramatically.
So for this very kind of intuitive player, like I'm curious how he takes to coaching at the professional levels, because I would anticipate his coaches trying to get him to be a little bit more structured and a little bit more studious. I wonder how well he's going to take to that. It can go either way, because if you have someone who's really intuitive, but then adds kind of a more analytical aspect to his game, maybe he starts recognizing that, you know, out of the 10 things he's tried, there's three of them that work really well and that are repeatable. And then he doubles down on those things and then, you know, becomes even more effective. Or maybe it goes the other way and he kind of loses that zest that he has, or, you know, gets put in the box. But we'll see, right? Like I think it's starting to be a more favorable environment for those kind of players, because, you know, with analytics, with more transparent kind of video availability, you see the really special players being effective at doing different things. And maybe he'll kind of quote unquote get left alone because he's so effective, but maybe it can go the other way, where maybe he has trouble finding, you know, repeatable patterns which are effective for him. And then that affects his confidence, and that kind of forces his coaches to maybe overcoach, and that kind of kills his way of playing. But we'll see.
Talking about killing a player's love for the game is what I'm understanding, which is possible. I mean, we've all seen it before, but yeah, it'll be super exciting to see. I had one player on my high school team like that. I'm like, I could see how many people would want to try to coach this kid, but leaving him alone is better than anything else. And I forget who said this to me once, but the general idea was like, don't try to fix the player or improve the player. Like, just take care of them. And that was like an absolute, you know, mind breaking thing for a lot of new coaches that I talk to, because I now spread that to them, because it seems like every player that's done playing and wants to get into coaching has the same idea. I'm going to fix all of my players and we're going to win a championship. And at the end of the day, it's just like, how do we best take care of the player? How do we get them to their next stage, whether that be playing hockey or just improving their life in general? And that's the most important thing, is taking care of our player first and foremost.
So, like, you know, we'll kind of end on this thought, but, you know, thinking about Alex and Phil, who are, you know, who just got drafted into the queue and who are, I hope, are going to play some games in the queue next season. It may sound really conceited, but like, I think they're NHLers, and all I got to do is prevent them or their parents, or, you know, making easy mistakes that could have been easily avoided, right? Because these kids have greatness in them already. So as you said, we just got to take care of them. We just got to bide our time, and they're going to do their thing. Maybe once in a while we'll make an adjustment here or there, but, you know, they have greatness in them. And I think if that's the one thing that I want them to know, is it that's it, right? Like, it's they already have it. I'll be there, you know, right there with them, helping them kind of with those blind spots I talk about. But it's their journey, and it's going to be their success. And then, like, I'm just happy kind of sitting back and watching them, or, you know, their parents, or, you know, celebrate those achievements. So that's it. Like, it's their thing. It's not mine.
Yes, it's their thing. It's the player's thing. I think that right there is an absolute goldmine, what you just said. I have nothing to top it, nor do I want to even try to add anything to it. Wonderful. Jack, thank you so much for coming on and having this conversation. This might be my favorite episode yet, to say the least, starting with fathers and ending on taking care of players.
Yeah. Well, again, happy Father's Day to you and to all the other hockey dads out there. If you have any questions about whether maybe it's your hockey, but more likely it's your kids' hockey, you can subscribe to the Hockey Tactics newsletter. It's jhanhky.substack.com. You can find me on Twitter, jhanhky. Once you're subscribed to my newsletter, just reply to any of the posts that you get in your inbox, and you'll be connected right to me. So yeah.
Same thing here. Hockey IQ newsletter. Google it. It's the easiest way to go about it. Awesome, Jack. Happy Father's Day. Cheers.
All All right, buddy. Talk to you soon.
That concludes this week's episode. Thanks for joining us here at Hockey IQ. If you haven't already, take a quick moment to hit that subscribe button, give us a thumbs up, and drop a review. If you want to be a great teammate, even recommend us to a friend. You can follow us at Hockey's Arsenal on Twitter and Instagram. Check out the website, hockeysarsenal.com, where you can subscribe to the weekly newsletter. You won't regret it. Catch you beauts here next week for a brand new episode.